If you would be turning with me over in your Bibles to the Old Testament in the book of Ecclesiastes, we began our study in this book last week, so we're not very far, of course, into this study, just looking now into chapter 2. And this, of course, is one of the books of wisdom of the Old Testament. And last week I told you of my belief that this book was penned by the words of Solomon. He was really the only son of David that could truly say that he ruled in Jerusalem and over all of Israel as described in this book. No other king of Israel seems to fit that description. And if you were here last week, you might remember, as we begin to work our way through this book, it might seem, as we went through the introduction on the surface, that this book seems to be a little bit on the depressing side of things. And as we go through this book, it may seem as if that sort of depression continues on, so to say. But if we keep in mind the purpose of this book from the very beginning, we won't lose our minds to the gloom and despair that is seemingly along the futile path. You see, Solomon writes this letter from the perspective of one who is living their life under the sun, that is, apart from God. Solomon says the one who lives his life apart from God will never find lasting gratification in anything that this world affords. They will never be satisfied because the eye is never full of seeing and the ear is never full of hearing. Everything that a man accumulates in this world goes away in the end. Now, again, Solomon has not got to this point because he saves it for that great ending that he has in this book. But to help us keep our sanity along the way, I'm going to remind you in each and every message that the answer to this futility that Solomon describes is to serve God while you can. Because apart from serving God, life means nothing. Life means nothing without God. So Solomon's answer is not to live your life under the sun, but live your life truly under heaven. When you live your life under heaven, you're building up treasures in heaven that will not fade and go away as the things of this earth will do as they grow strangely dim. Now, as we look to chapter 2, Solomon is going to begin elaborating. Chapter 1 was an introduction. Chapter 2, he begins elaborating of how he sought after happiness or contentment or joy in the things of this world and how he did not find them. It almost seems as if as we go through chapter 2 that Solomon is a scientist and he's on an observational journey through life of trying to figure out what will lead to happiness. And I told you last week in our time together as well that as we go through the book of Ecclesiastes, you'll probably find yourself somewhere among the chapters. And you may find yourself indeed right here in this chapter, maybe not now, but maybe sometime in your life. You can look back and say, yeah, that was me, trying to find happiness in all of the wrong places. But don't be surprised if this chapter certainly gets you today. Let's look in verse number 1. It says, I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. Now, as we go through this chapter, we're going to talk about things that are not necessarily sinful. That's right, we're going to talk about some things that aren't necessarily sinful. They can become sinful to us as a Christian, of course, if they become our focus in life, that it becomes our life goal, so to say. When these things become more important than seeking and following after God, then it becomes sin unto us. But the things listed in this chapter really aren't things that are sinful in nature. Solomon isn't expressing trying to find pleasures in sin. He's just trying to find pleasures in the things of this earth. So he says he was trying to find happiness by enjoying mirth. Now, what is mirth? Mirth is another way of saying the pleasures of life. The pleasures of life. And you know, as you think about the pleasures of life, everyone has a different idea of what the pleasures of life truly are. For some of you, you may think, you know, the ultimate goal of life maybe is to wake up to a mountain view with a nice cup of stout coffee in the morning. Some of you may like the ocean instead. I think that you all know that I like the ocean. It's always been kind of one of my pipe dreams to maybe retire to the ocean someday. But, you know, I used to think that I could just spend hours out there with nobody around, just looking at the waves. And recently on the trip to Anguilla where there was nobody around, I found out that I can't do that. That's enjoyment for just a little bit of time. And then you start to think to yourself, there's got to be more than this. I can't just sit here all day. You can only read so much. There must be something more. You see, whatever the pleasure is, and Solomon here, as he goes through this chapter, he's going to be speaking more about these pleasures, but as we look at these pleasures, whatever they are, eventually the flesh will become dissatisfied. Sometimes it'll want something more, something different, something new. In verse 2 he says, I said of laughter, it is mad. And of mirth, what doeth it? Maybe one of the things that you get pleasure from in life is laughter. And we all like to laugh, I think. And it's a good thing, right? Nothing wrong with laughter. There's no sin in that. But how often do we look to comedy to fulfill something that is missing within our own lives? Think about all the sitcoms on TV. They make us laugh, or movies that are designed to do the same. But what lasting value is there in it? Did a sitcom ever change your life? Did a comedy that you went to the movie ever make all your troubles go away when you walked out of the theater? The answer is no. If laughter was the answer to joy and contentment, then surely comedians should be the most content people on all the earth. But is that the reality? Of course not. We've watched some of the people that have made us laugh the hardest die treacherous lives of drug overdose. And some live the most unhappy lives around. Laughter is good, but in the end, it won't bring lasting happiness. Pleasure is good, but living a life of pleasure without inner fulfillment is fleeting at best. Then in verse 3, it says, I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom and to lay hold on folly. Till I might see what was that good for the sons of men which they should do under heaven all the days of their life. Solomon says he then looked at the pleasures of life and didn't find any lasting happiness, and he looked at laughter and he didn't find any lasting joy and contentment there, so now he turns his heart towards wine. And Solomon here, understand, he's not talking about the evilness of alcohol, and he's not preaching a message of abstinence. Again, this list is a list of things that God gave man to enjoy, as long as the perspective is right. But Solomon said he turned himself to wine, exploring the way of the sons of men. And yet, how many men have taken that gift of God and taken it to extremes and tried to find happiness at the bottom of a bottle? They work all day and nothing makes them happy. They come home or they head to the bar to try to find happiness at the bottom of a glass. How many songs have been written to remind us of this vanity of vanities that is so common to man? I've got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. I'll be okay. Or perhaps you prefer the classic words of Billy Joe's Piano Man as I do. And the waitress is practicing politics as the businessman slowly gets stoned. They're sharing a drink they call loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone. Whether it's the so-called whiskey drowning the blues away or wasting away again in Margaritaville, the truth is the answer to life's happiness is never found with popping a top again. The reality is that when morning comes, reality comes, and often a headache to go along with it. And yet the sons of men repeat it night after night, trying to forget about life for a while. So Solomon tried to find happiness in pleasure, happiness in laughter, happiness in wine, tried to find something with meaning and reason, and none of it lasted. It was all fleeting. Nothing really mattered at all. So again, let's read a few verses here this time, beginning in verse 4 and through 6. It says, I made me great works, I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards and planted trees in them and all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. You know, some people wonder how others can just go home in the evening and plop down in front of the TV and watch those sitcoms all night and laugh at those comedians, or maybe even sit down and come home and drink all evening, when they could be doing something productive, right? Something productive. That's what some people try to find happiness in, building, remodeling, planting. But what are they trying often to do? They are trying to find contentment, a lasting contentment in their homes, in their barns, and in their gardens. They are actively trying to live up to the motto that Lowe's has ingrained into our head of never stop improving. And again, there is nothing wrong with planting or building. But if a man or woman is planting and building and remodeling till their heart is content, they will find that their heart will never be content, because when they get to the end, they'll go back to the first project and say, we need to do it again. Yeah. Again, it's like we said last week, if you aren't content with what you have, you will never be content with what is to come. Think of all the great things that Solomon built, with all of the wealth that he had, but everything that he had is gone today. Nothing lasted. It was all destroyed by the hands of angry men. Let's read again, verse 7. I got me servants and maidens and servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. Solomon had the wealth to have servants to do everything for him. Did you ever think of, boy, if I just had somebody to mow my lawn, to weed eat, somebody to do my laundry and clean my house, boy, I could just come home from work and be happy. I could just be, that would be great. I mean, we all work those 8-hour days. We'd just love to come home and just rest. Wouldn't it be great to have somebody do it for you? Sounds pretty great. Someone to bring you your remote and bring your drink to you as you watch that comedy. It all sounds great, but in the end, it's no lasting pleasure. Some of y'all are enjoying this way too much. Verse number 8 says, I gathered me also silver and gold and peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men and musical instruments and that of all sorts. Some people put their money in the things of this world. Some people like to put their money into real estate. Some People like just to put their money in the bank and just know that it's there for whenever they want it to be there. You know, Solomon had the money to do both. Invest as much as he wanted in real estate. Invest in the things that he wanted and have enough sitting there for whenever he wanted. You know, we're told that in the days of Solomon that silver was so common in Jerusalem it was like stones. That's a lot of money floating around Jerusalem. Solomon was one of the richest men that had ever lived, comparatively to what he had. But he found that money wasn't the answer to life. And certainly we see that. We know that. We should know that. How many lotto winners who have won these mega fortunes have had their lives turned upside down, not for the better, but for the worse? Many times after they've gone all the way through it and they're left with nothing, they wish they had never had it to begin with. If money brought lasting happiness, then wouldn't you agree that Hollywood actors should be some of the happiest people on earth? But that isn't the reality of the situation we see there, is it? Instead, we see some of the most unhappy people living miserable lives, playing scenes on movies of happy endings that they themselves wish they had. Money doesn't buy happiness and it doesn't buy contentment. And you all have heard me say many times in the past, but money can buy you a big house, but it will never buy you a home. And money can buy a really big diamond, but it will never buy love. And money can buy the most luxurious of beds, but it will never give you rest at night. Riches are not the answer to man's quest for contentment. After the earthly pursuit for silver and gold and finding fleeting happiness, Solomon then said he turned to music to soothe his soul. And music can certainly does do that. It has that effect upon us. It has a way of calming our hearts and relaxing us when we need to take a breather or maybe get us up and going when we want a good workout or something of that nature. Music is a good thing, but music comes to an end. There will come a time or a day when the music is gone, the playlist is over, and the music dies, and reality returns. Reality always returns. And again, if music was to bring us the most lasting happiness, how about all those singers that we listen to? Again, should they not be the happiest people around? But yet, who writes those sad songs we listen to? Who writes those songs about terrible childhoods? Who writes those songs of sometimes horrific things? It's them. So often we glamorize the kind of people that we've been talking about, thinking they have the perfect life. But folks, again, you watch the lives of comedians and musicians and these wealthy actors, and what do you find? They're doing nothing but chasing the wind, just like the other sons of men that are living life under the sun, chasing the wind and never finding a lasting happiness. In verse number 9 it says, "So I was great, and I increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me." That's an important thing that he said. You know, some would go down these paths that we've described so far only to lose themselves in the process. Solomon went down these paths looking for contentment, but he didn't lose himself to them. His wisdom stayed with him enough that he realized that these things were futile in nature, that all he was doing is chasing the wind, grasping for contentment in something that would never last. All just vanity of vanities. Verse number 10 says, "And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them, I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Now Solomon has been going through specific examples, but now he turns to generalities. Whatever he would seek to follow after, to find joy in, he found in the end there was no joy, but rather vexation of spirit. And again, remember that phrase literally means chasing the wind or grasping for the wind. Something that you can't hold on to forever. Now beginning in verse 12, the quest for lasting happiness now turns towards the intellectual side of things. Now that he has said he didn't find any lasting joys in the pleasures that this earth had to offer, he now turns to the subject of wisdom and knowledge itself. I mean, a lot of people think that it is education that is our greatest joy, you know, that that's going to bring us some kind of lasting contentment. If you get enough degrees, then that's it. You've reached it. It's your way of escape. It says, and I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? And I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, and as far as the light excelleth darkness. Solomon looked to see whether wisdom or ignorance was better. Based upon what he observed, he believed that wisdom had a greater gain in life than being ignorant. I think most of us would agree with that. Although sometimes ignorance is truly bliss, most of us would rather live an existence of which we know what's going on and what we can expect and prepare for. Solomon says that those who live in ignorance, he compares those to who are living their life in the dark. And that's kind of the way we describe it sometimes, you know. You're just in the dark about something. Verse 14. Keep reading here as we go along with this. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Even though wisdom is better than folly, even though wisdom is better than ignorance, what is the end of both? What is the one event that happens to the wise man and to the foolish man? Well, since Solomon is not talking about taxes here, we know that he must be speaking about death, right? There's only two things that are certain in life, what Ben Franklin said, and that's taxes and death. But again, man can seek out the knowledge of life, or he can be happy to know very little, but in the end, both men are going to die. Verse 15, now considering the subject of death and the things that are to come, it says, then I said in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this is also a vanity, for there is no remembrance of the wise man, or wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Solomon laments that the world forgets the wise men just like as it forgets those that are fools. And true, we understand there are some wise men that have written things that have kind of lasted and stood the test of time. Things like Solomon wrote here in Ecclesiastes. Likewise, there have been some fools in life who have done such foolish things that their names have lived forever as well. But how many wise men have died whose names were never known to more than a handful? The answer is far more than those whose words we remember. And how many more fools have died that no one remembers as well? Too many to count. Now look at this next line. Based with this thought that death was coming, whether he was wise or foolish, death was coming. He tried to find pleasure in everything and has not found it in anything. And it led him to this point in verse 17. Therefore, I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. How sad is this? The man who, in the eyes of many, had it all, wisdom, wealth, and power and fame, people to do whatever he asked to do, things in abundance to supply and fulfill the pleasures of men, yet he found contentment in none of these things. And Solomon says the reality of the futility of life, whether it be in riches or fame and glory or wisdom, has caused him to hate the very life that he's living. He was so drawn to despair that he wishes he could have traded it for death, because at least death is final. But then, what would happen to all the things he worked for? What about all of those things, all the wealth that he has acquired when he was gone? After all, he certainly could not take it with him. We came into this life with nothing, and we shall leave with nothing. So what about all the stuff that seemed to be so important? All of those things that he was building up to find some happiness in? Well, now he begins to explore the reality of what will happen after he's dead. Verse number 18, it says, "Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me." I read this verse and I wonder what Solomon's perceptions were of his children, especially his oldest son, who would seem to inherit the most. And certainly we know that his son Rehoboam sat upon the throne after him, and because of his foolishness, he lost most everything that his father worked for his entire life in a matter of months. Maybe Solomon perceived that as he wrote this verse, because he's not excited about the thought that everything that he's worked for is going to go to his kids. Solomon said he hated everything that he had labored for because he was just going to have to give it to somebody else. Verse number 19. "And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet he shall have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity." Sorry. I read this verse and I think about the vanity that is here, and I think of vanity in two ways. First of all, the vanity of the one who receives all of this wealth and then squanders it, trying to find happiness in all of the wrong places himself. But secondly, and certainly the greater context here is this: it is a vanity for man to worry that his possessions are not going to last forever after he is gone. If someone takes your precious Star Wars memorabilia collection and puts them in boxes and sells them for next to nothing in a yard sale, why should it bother you? But Solomon had a lot, and it was bothering his heart that others would not care for his things that he had worked for as much as he. So he continues on this thought. In verse 20, "Therefore, I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and equity, Yet a man that hath not labored therein shall leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. Solomon tells us the reality of the things that he worked so hard for and that we work so hard for are going to be left to those who have not labored for them. Verse 17, he said he hated his life again. He had no lasting happiness. Verse 21, he says he hates life and wants to die. But he doesn't want to die because his sons will get it, what he has. What a rotten wreck you're in. You've found happiness in nothing to the point where you just say life's not worth it. But yet if you die, you have to leave it to those who will not appreciate it. So it's better to be around so they can't have it. Let's keep reading. Verse 22. For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. Again, this is now a summary of the things he's been saying. A man goes through life working and working to have more and more, but his days are full of grief and sorrow. His nights are full of despair. What good then is life, you might ask? Is it just one disappointment after another? Well, the answer is, apart from God, yes. Now in verse 24 it says, there is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink, that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. The things that Solomon sought to find contentment in were not bad things. Food is a good thing. Drink is a good thing. Labor is a good thing. And all of these things are a gift from God. And all of these things are given for Christians to enjoy. Understand, God never said that Christians should not enjoy the pleasures of life. The problem, though, becomes when we live for those things rather than for the God who freely gives us those things. That is what Solomon's issue is here in this chapter. He's not enjoying the gifts as things provided by God. He's trying to find fulfillment as the sons of men under the sun in things rather than in the one who gave those things. And in verse 25 it says, for who can eat, or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? When it comes to men, no one had been blessed like Solomon had been blessed in wisdom, wealth, and power. He should have been the happiest man under heaven. But he's living in this chapter as an unhappy man under the sun. And our last verse for today is, for God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. I believe what our verse is saying is that God gives to men, but the one who takes these things and tries to find satisfaction in the things will only find travail. The one who is receiving these things as a blessing of God understands their joy and lasting contentment is not in the things of this world, but in, again, in the Lord who gives it. So as we come to the end of this chapter this morning, whether you be here or whether you be listening over Facebook or wherever it might be, are you going through life looking for the next big thing to bring you happiness? Or are you finding your contentment in the one who loves to give good gifts to his children? I hope that's your perspective, because only in that will we find any kind of lasting contentment. I hope your joy is from the Lord and not from the things of this earth that are fleeting away. With that, let's end.